This is the Ed Milet Show.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Today's really something I've been looking forward to. Let me tell you why. I have only done this twice in my entire life, but I'm watching Netflix a few weeks ago, and I just watched this brilliant piece of art that was not only hilarious, but it inspired me. And I'm watching this man communicate and perform what he's great at doing, and I just see a depth to him, and I'm like, I want to talk to this person about his life. I have a feeling this could be one of the most inspiring episodes we've ever done before. Wow. And sure enough, I message him, and about 42 seconds later, he messages me back, and here we are a few weeks later. So
I'm not busy.
Yeah, we're both two of the busiest human beings on earth. He just literally landed at the airport, and we made this thing happen because I think we both had a sense we should do this together. So his special is called It Ain't for the Weak on Netflix right now. It is gold. 10 out of 10. If there was a higher number I could give it, I would.
Wow.
You will be laughing the entire time, but you will also leave there different. You will leave there inspired, and I'm hoping that happens today as well. David A. Arnold, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. I'm so excited to be here, man. So funny, literally, because I told my sister I was coming,
yeah.
And she is so excited. She's like, I can't wait. I listen to Ed all the time. Like, she's like, when she started firing off all your guests and everything, and then she went, what are you doing on there? Like, your family is always the last people to believe in anything that you're doing. But when you hit me, and you said what you said in the message, because I get a lot of messages.
Sure.
And, you know, obviously you look at the people who are verified first, because you go, okay, they've been through
it. It might be a real person.
Right, it might, exactly. And I looked at it, of course, I'm like, oh, okay, I know. And then when you get it from somebody who makes a living recognizing certain things, it's different than, oh, you're funny. It's a different type of compliment than, oh, you're funny.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
It hits you in a deeper space.
Well, your stuff hits me that way. I mean, I just mean it. And by the way, all the way back, I watched Fat Ballerina, your previous special, and I was watching with my wife. I'm like, this guy is brilliant. How come I don't know him? Right?
Isn't
and that's kind of where I want to start.
Thing.
You are right now blowing up. You got the Nickelodeon show.
Yeah.
You got your tour.
Yeah.
You got the Netflix special. You're doing a movie right now. Like, you're the dude.
Yeah,
and
it's working.
You're this overnight success that took 27 freaking years.
I know.
So take us back a little bit, because I just think this is one. I think they're inspiring people.
Yeah.
But then I think there are people who have lived inspiring lives. You're both.
Wow.
And so,
thanks.
So did it really take you 20 plus years to actually really make a great living and break through doing this?
No, it did not. It didn't take 20 to make a great living. I've been making a really good living for about 10 years, you know, because I've been writing and producing television from House of Pain and Meet the Browns for Tyler Perry to Real Husbands of Hollywood for Kevin Hart, Fuller House on Netflix, the reboot of that. I mean, I've written and produced a lot of television for a long time. And now, you know, with the show that I created, That Girl Lele, that's on Nickelodeon and got picked up on Netflix, which is like the number one show on their network, is killing, you know, creating that show made me only the sixth black man in the history of TV to have a soul created by credit of a TV show, which I didn't even know until it happened, you know, when Will Packer called me up to do it. So I've been making a living, sure, you know, a good living for a minute, but like now to the point where I'm starting to, people are starting to put my face with the comedy.
Yes.
That's been in the last couple of years, the pandemic, social media. It's. I tell people this all the time. It's never been one thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a lot of little things that I've consistently done, but all driven towards the same goal.
Was this the goal? So first off, about a decade making a good living.
Yeah.
But public notoriety. That people walk down the street and go, hey, there's David A. Arnold. That's been recent.
That's been in the last couple of years.
Yeah. And so was this the plan? Did you always want to do stand-up? Did you want to write, or did you want to do all of it?
Stand-up and two things I've wanted to, when I came to town, that I wanted to do, which was 25 years ago. I wanted to do stand-up. I wanted to be known for doing, I wanted to be respected by the people in the stand-up community and wanted people to know that that's what I did. And I wanted to play a dad on a sitcom. Even before I was a father, before I was married, before I was even old enough to play a father, that's always what I wanted to do.
And, you know, that's one of the things about your special I just want to say to you. I think I love it for a couple of reasons. One, I get emotional. I don't know why I'm saying this. I love how you are open and honest in how you talk about your family.
Yeah.
And yourself as a father.
Yeah.
I also think, if I'm being honest with you, I think there's a layer to it that I respect and admire more, and that there's a something beautiful about a black man also doing that on stage, talking about his family and his children. Is that, were you conscious of that? Like, I want to make sure that I've honored my wife and honored my children as I've got this far down the road, or was it just that it's just so damn funny you talk about it?
I think it's probably a combination of both. You know, I've always thought that what is going on in my house is hilarious and ridiculous and painful at times, you know, as it is. And I think it was the same way growing up. I knew, you know, I bring my wife and children out on stage with me at the end of my special.
Yes.
And I decided to do that like somewhere in between my tour when I was preparing to film the special. I was like, I was just running on a treadmill. And that's where I do a lot of my thinking when I'm working out, right?
Me too.
And it's something just said, you know, people know me already. And people who follow my social media, my Instagram and stuff, and Facebook and all that, they know me and my family because I've been posting videos for the last couple of years that have just exploded.
Viral videos.
Right? It's just unbelievable. And I was like, they already know this world. I'm about to go out on stage and talk about this world. Mm-hmm. Why not bring the people out that I'm talking about?
It's beautiful.
And that has resonated with people more so much that even the documentary that's attached to the end of the special even makes more sense. So I think it was a conscious thing, but it was also an organic thing that just made sense.
Yeah, I love the documentary at the end, which we're going to talk about a little bit. It's really cool to hear someone talk about their life and then actually see the actual people at the end. That was brilliant that you did that.
Thank you.
But you said something in the special. So here we go, guys. We're going to get into the stuff that's going to, like, you're going to go, okay, this is why I want to share this. This is what I'm going to take away from this interview because this man's story is so inspiring. Having said that, you say this thing in there that, like, I stopped it and I made my daughter watch it.
Wow.
There's a couple things.
How old is your daughter?
18.
Okay. She's so I'm 15 and 17.
I know. We're right in the same zone. So I relate to the stuff you talk about during COVID and all the other stuff you talk about, right? Believe me, I relate to the frosting being off the cake and from Fat Ballerina. I relate to the cookie the other day where someone ate a half a damn cookie and left it on the counter. Yeah, all that stuff. Like, the reason it's so funny is when you have kids, you relate to this. But the thing I really related to is you say, I got that thing. I got that thing.
Yes.
And I'm like, Bella, watch this.
Yes.
This is what I've been trying to tell you right here. That thing. Your dad's got that thing. That's, sometimes it's like this dog in me, this relentless thing that it's invisible, but it's tangible. It's this thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I want you to talk to that because I think people watching this, like, hey, they try to get these notes. This is what I need to do to be successful. This is what I got to do. I got to think this. I got to read this book. The truth is, underneath all that, you got to have that thing.
You got to have that thing. It's that thing inside of you that it cannot be given to you. You have to find it. You can see it from others in the examples and, you know, that you've seen grow. My grandfather had that thing. My grandfather put all of us through college with an eighth grade education. You know what I'm saying? He laid asphalt in Cleveland, Ohio. And that was my summers from 7 years old till 17. We went out and worked the summers with my grandfather laying 800 degree asphalt in the heat. That's where I learned to get that thing. My stepfather, who started the OJs and then quit the day before they made $1 million and went on to watch them become the biggest thing ever. Right. And he went on to try to prove and be a producer and never hit that level of success again. But I watched him chase that every day. He had that thing.
Yes.
And that thing is something that you have to find it. You know what I mean? And and a lot, and it can only be given. When I got sober, it was that thing that told me I don't want to live like this no more. And I deserve better because I grew up around greatness.
Yeah.
So, like, why would I sell myself short? And that's when I tell my daughters, they play volleyball, when whatever they try to, from the volleyball, from making friends, from being better in school, you got to have that thing inside of you because life is always coming for you.
That's so true.
And that's what I try to give them. I said, you ain't got to be. Listen, I woke up at 29 years old. That's when I decided that I wanted to be different.
Is that right? Is that when you got sober?
Yeah, I got sober at 29 permanently. I got sober twice before that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Once would lasted 18 months, the other lasted 9 months. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this time I had started doing stand-up and I knew inside that I had it, that I had what it took to be great.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I needed to drop that habit. I needed to get rid of that.
That's a big lesson, by the way, everyone, just to step back. A lot of things, it's not just always the things that you have to do. It's actually something you got to drop. That's a habit. By the way, that habit could literally be just like worrying. That habit could be oversleeping.
Yes.
It could be that you drink too much. It could be, but a lot of times, like, okay, what do I need to do? You know, what's the thing I got to do? Well, maybe there's a thing you need to not do. also in your life, right?
Wow. Yes.
You know, by the way, even if you're a guy watching this, there's a lot of you guys watching this. You're young, you're 28, you're 29, you're making a bunch of money.
Yep.
You got 18 different women in your phone right now.
Yep.
And even, you're successful in spite of the fact that you do that, by the way.
Right.
And eventually that distraction, that lack of focus, that stress, that holding it all together will steal from your business life also. There's a price to be paid somewhere along the line. So maybe it's things you have to stop doing in your life. Now, you said 17.
Mm-hmm. Your life is so...
This could go 5 hours for me. Like, I know a lot about you, right? Like,
I love that.
At 17, just correct me when I'm wrong all the way along.
Sure.
But also at 17, because there's, listen, you had this hardworking grandfather. That's an incredible story. And he honors these three men, by the way. He honors Eddie. He honors
Joshua,
who was the OJ's.
No, Joshua was my grandfather.
Grandfather.
And Bobby was my stepfather.
Stepfather and the OJ's. And like literally the day before all the money comes in for the OJ's. And you'll hear him honor these men in the special. But also at 17, you get another giant piece of news. A lot of guys just go, okay, I'm out, man. I check out. Like, this is devastating news. I'm going to use this story as an excuse to be a really average dude the rest of my life.
Exactly.
And tell them what you find out at 17.
Which I talked about in my first Netflix special, Fat Ballerina. I talked about how at 17, I found out who I thought Eddie was my father. I found out was not my biological father, that he actually adopted me when I was 6 months old. And there was another guy who I actually knew because he was a friend of the family. So he was around and I played with his children as friends, not knowing they were really my half brother and sister. And my mom told me at this age, like, this is who made you. Mm. And, you know, yeah, sure, it could have sent me into a tailspin, but it didn't. What it did is it made me understand in that moment the difference between being a father and making a child. Because that's what my dad is. My dad is that's when I say my dad, my father, that's Eddie Arnold. Yeah. Mike Payne, who made me, I call him my maker. You know what I mean? But I will never disrespect my father by giving Mike Payne the title of dad, and which he's a dad and father to other children that I know.
Just not you.
You know, he's just not that to me, you know? And so this is what I say to people who have come to me and I've talked to about things that have happened to us in our life, which everybody gets things that happen that are unfortunate. Mm. You find out your dad is this, your parents are on drugs, you were abused this. I always say this, I hear everything you're saying, mm-hmm. and I want you to know that you're right, that that was unfortunate and wrong that it happened to you. Mm. And it was painful and unfair.
Yeah.
Now what?
Right. Right.
We got everybody stops there, but you got to go past that. Mm-hmm. You got to go now what? Because there's no line to get in for everybody who was mistreated. So where you can just stand in line and be like, everybody who had a bad childhood, come over here. We're going to give you a stipend for the rest of your life. It doesn't work like that.
So true.
You have to figure out how to get around that. And that's when I realized after the third time being in rehab, I was laying in rehab. I went to rehab here at the VA in Westwood. Here in Los Angeles. And I remember my first night there, and I was laying in this huge room that had like tons of, you know, racks, beds, you know, bunk beds, just lined up and down like army barracks. And it was only me and one other guy across from me. And he was going through withdrawals in the middle of the night. And I remember I was laying there and I remember saying to myself, I don't belong in here. Mm. And then right behind that was another voice that said, see, this is why you're here, because you're arrogant and you think you're better than, but you're not. And then right behind that was a voice that my father, Eddie, said to me when I was 19 and I was doing nothing and I was living with him. And he said, the only difference between you and the bum outside is that you live with me. And all of these voices hit me back to back. And then the next voice was, you've gotten sober for one time. It was to not get kicked out of the Navy. The other time it was for this, so this girl wouldn't break up with you. Now, none of those things, you have none of those things. Mm-hmm. So what you going to do? Do you care enough about you? You try to do it for the Navy. You try to do it for a girl. Do you care enough about David to try? And it was in that moment that I realized I did not want to have, that I had something greater to do and I wanted to live a different life.
Brother, that's incredible. You and my dad, by the way, got sober about a quarter of a mile from each other.
Wow.
Which is crazy. And my dad ended up being sober for 35 years. And when my dad got sober, because he had tried a bunch of times like you did, he did say, hey, look, I'm going to give this one more try because I don't want to lose my family. That was his reason when he tried.
Sure.
But his reason for staying, he told me later, he goes, I'm actually doing this for me.
Yes.
I'm doing this for me. And it's like really, really telling thing. Because I think sometimes really good people are so unselfish, they're unwilling to give themselves the gift of changing.
Sure.
And also, sure, they love telling that story, that old story. Wouldn't it be a shame if your whole story was just that, hey, I had this upbringing, found out my dad wasn't my dad, and I did some coke, and I just partied through my 20s. That's my story.
Yeah.
Right? Or my story was, alcoholic dad, not things great when I was a kid. I just keep telling the story into my 50s.
No, but
at some point, you got to start writing new chapters of your life. You said something. I write your stuff down.
Oh, my gosh.
You said, so many people live their lives making excuses. I refuse to live in the shadows of what if.
Yeah.
And then you talk about your family wanting to be. Because here's the thing. This sounds really good now. Like, okay, you got all this stuff going on with the Nickelodeon show. You're blowing up.
Yeah.
But I'm picturing this dude kind of going to comedy stores all those years.
Yes.
Working on his act.
Yes.
I picture the guy. I want you to talk about this. Because you tie it together so freaking brilliantly, your work, where your OJ's dad.
Yes, Bobby. Okay,
Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
He has this deal where you got to get juice tickets. You need to tell them this, and then I need them to see the special. But you fight, so one glass of juice and then water the rest of the day.
That's right.
But you actually, to make your dream come true.
Yes.
Kind of become him for a little while through necessity. So just give him this, please. I want them to pick, because there's a lot of people right now, they're driving, running on the treadmill, or they're listening to this going, I got a dream, and there's no evidence I should keep pursuing this. There's no evidence. It's like, I'm not profitable.
Right.
In fact, I'm losing money. I'm bleeding money. I'm going through my old 401k from when I used to work somewhere else.
Yeah.
And the pressure is caving in. Is this a sign? And maybe it is for some people.
Sure.
But is this a sign? Hey, I got to pack it in. So take them through that.
I just remember like coming up as a kid, you know, my stepfather, you know, just money was tight. So we broke rules. You know what I mean? Which was, you know what I mean? Like one glass of juice per kid per day was what we grew up with. I never, you know, and of course the comedy is you exaggerated till he gave us drink tickets. But you know what I mean? Which that's what it felt like. You know what I mean?
Right.
It felt like when I walked in the room, he was like, I think you had your glass of juice earlier at 11:15 this morning. I'm like, how do you know that? Right? But like that's how he was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I hated it. Mm-hmm. But then later in life, when I quit my job where I worked full time as a nurse during the day and I started pursuing my stand up, and we were broke. Mm-hmm. And I just remember starting to have moments where I was like, no more like generic cereal. My children don't even know what Kool-Aid is, which I feel like as a black man alone, I failed on that alone. Like my children like looked at Kool-Aid like this, what is this? Like, you know, they grew up with real juice. I didn't have real juice till I was 32. These kids been living on real, real juice their whole life. So like I literally remember when they were 2 and 4, like we cut corners. Yeah. We like where your sister, I think Ashlyn, my youngest, wore her oldest sister, Anna Grace's, clothes for the first 4 years of her life.
Wow.
Pass them down to her. She don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's little things like that. And I just remember I used to stand outside one of the clubs called the Comedy Union, which is no longer there. And it was the club that I was an urban club in Los Angeles, Pico and La Brea, where I spent a lot of time honing my act. They're the Comedy Store and the Laugh Factory. And I would stand outside that club and sell DVDs of my stand-up, mm-hmm. which was from other places where I recorded different material, for $10 a DVD. And this is not the town that you stand out in front of the club and sell DVD. Like, it's because your peers are here. Like, you do that on the road. When you're doing it in front of the club in town, you really need
money.
You
need the money.
And I would do it. And my wife tells the story of how I came home one night with $150 because I sold 15 DVDs that night. And she said, the pride that was on your face, I will never forget. And I remember that now, you know, and it's like, so now when our lives are different, it makes me think about those times and realizing that I had to go through that to see how much I love it, how much I want it.
Yeah.
If it's in me.
If it's in
you. If I got that thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's, yeah. And I do, and that's why I'm still here.
This phrase you use all the time, which is funny, but it ain't for the weak.
No.
And it's not.
Mm-mm.
Like,
mm-mm.
Winning life, breaking through ain't for the weak.
It's not.
It just isn't. And I don't know that, I think a lot of people are always looking for techniques instead of this internal fortitude, this strength, this.
Get up and go.
Go, right? There's a part of people that are successful that you got to dig for that in your life. Don't you also think, I want to ask you this, I don't know how spiritual or religious you are, but.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like this is just the time you were ready for this now.
Yep, 100%.
In other words, had you got that. Elaborate a little bit. I'm picturing you at 31, you're sober a year or two. I'm like, I wonder if that might have been a dangerous time.
No. I wouldn't be married. I would, you know, none of these things would be what it is. I 100% know that getting this in my 50s is when I needed it, when I should have it. My daughters are at the age where they need me in ways that they didn't need me before, my wife, all of the things, you know what I mean? Like, it's not lost on me that the creator, the higher power, whatever works for you, mm-hmm. brought these things into my life at this time in my life. Because even the thing, I'm walking through the airport in Atlanta, headed here, and I got stopped maybe four times for pictures and to say hello. And it feels great. Mm-hmm. It really feels great. I'm not going to lie. It feels fantastic for people to recognize something that I've been working on every day for 28 years. It feels good. But there's a glass ceiling to that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It only goes so far.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because I can see beyond that.
I do.
And for so many years, I've been in this town watching people blow up and go away.
Gosh, that's so true.
And I've seen people be famous, mm-hmm. but broke.
Me too.
Yeah. And I don't want to be any of those things.
Anybody ever think you're Maxwell?
No.
I told my wife.
Yes, I've heard that. Yes, I have.
You have got to have heard this. Maybe his older brother, maybe, no offense, but come on.
Any light skin.
No. The bone structure, everything.
Yes, I've heard that. I have heard that.
All you guys, just Google Maxwell and then watch the YouTube.
And David A. Arnold, you tell me.
Tell me if there's just a little shred that I'm right about it. Okay? Just trust me. All right? So you can use that. No, but so there you go. There you go. So I'm curious what this process is like. I want them to go through this grind with you. You have an hour act, right? So,
yeah.
And I speak, and I know what it's like to even get tired of hearing from myself. What does it look like when you start creating material all the way to the special?
Mm-hmm.
How many hours go into this? When are you writing? When do the concepts come up? How many sets do you have to do to where you're like, this is tight now? I own this. This is the creative process to have one special. Because I think the other thing that's underestimated is just the amount of precise grinding and working required to become outstanding at what you do.
Yes.
That part of the process.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, every comedian is different. Some people, comedians would like to go, I don't write nothing down. It's all, you know, I'm not that person. I'm not that good.
Mm-hmm.
My bits come from being in the moment and living and having the experiences.
Okay.
You know,
but are you in the experience? I'm just curious. Are you in the experience going, this could be a bit?
Yes.
Okay.
Comedians are very, you know, introverted people. We're very on top of everything we're thinking and feeling,
mm-hmm.
like everything, like all the information that comes at us as it's coming to us, we're evaluating and giving our opinion on it in our head.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so any interaction with you, my wife, like constantly, that's just where I'm at. Right. And so like for me, when I started going out and working out for, to do It Ain't for the Week, I think we did 30 cities, which is comedy clubs. And you know, I do five shows a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So you take that 30 times five, it's about 150 sets,
wow.
right? An
yeah.
hour and 20 minutes is normally what I'm on stage doing. And
wow.
you know, you do this again and again and again, and I record all of my material. I record every set that I do. Okay. And I go back, and when I'm on the treadmill or I'm in the gym the next day working out, I listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I can go, oh, that's good. Nope, that's no good. I don't need that. Get that. Like, it's work. It's a process. And that's how I do it again. It's reps. It's like, you know, it's like how you get tone again, 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 again. Like, that's literally it.
I think the tolerance for that is for very few people, brother. I mean, this in everything. Like,
sure.
Even salespeople that are listening to this right now, like, are you that on your presentation? Are you that on your clothes? Are you that on your nuance? I even watch you where you go, even some of your transfers of your laughing and the rhythm and how you keep it together. Chappelle bumped that mic on his leg, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
these are little things that if you're watching the best of the best, you should be breaking them down. And the subtleties of what they do. Sebastian Maniscalco will go go very long. Me too. Won't go that very long until he moves his body a particular way, right? Like he's not a standstill guy.
Right.
So,
but
in every career, it's the precision. It's Nick Saban for Alabama says, we don't practice until we get it right. We practice until we can't get it wrong.
That's right.
And it's just a different standard of the best. And David, you guys, is the best.
Thank you. For me
right now, it's the best set that I've watched maybe ever, but certainly as long as I can recall.
That you know what? I tell, like, because I teach one of the largest stand-up comedy classes in the country.
I didn't know that.
And I've been doing it for 10 years. And I stopped doing it during the pandemic. I have well over 300-plus people on my waiting list. And I'm about to do a seminar, which I haven't done it in 2 years. I'm about to do it in like next month, and we're just doing 2 days. And I miss it because I love talking about the art of stand-up, you know. And one of the things that I tell people when I do my stand-up, it's in my muscle. It's in my muscle memory. Mm. Like when I start to do material and I start to tell stories, I'm in a certain place when I hit this joke. When I'm like, it becomes that where it's locked in. But there's still enough room for me to be David. There's still enough room for it to be the same, but it's a little different.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And
I
so like even now, like working on, I'm working, like the night I did It Ain't for the Week, that night I have not done any of that material since that night.
Is that right?
Not
really?
One joke.
Wow.
And the next day, the next week, I was on to, and I'm doing a new tour called Pace Yourself now. Yeah. And I've been out, we're doing 30 more cities.
Go see him.
And I literally have not done what, and I'm doing a whole new hour in 20 minutes.
Hmm.
Now, this is the benefit. This comes from having done stand-up for 28 years under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's seen me.
Yeah.
So they don't know that I'm like this caged animal that's been working forever, and now I'm finally getting a chance to run out in the wild.
It's amazing to me.
You know,
it's one of the best stories ever because it, you know, although you have had this financial success you were talking about,
this
notion of all this time under the radar to be that good. Now, let me ask you this. By the way, one little lesson he said there, I just want to add everyone just so that everyone's listening. I think you got to be obsessed. So, like, it's really, comedy's really never off for you. Like, you're with your family, you're present.
Right, yes.
But, like, you're still looking for your craft in it.
I can't help it.
Right, that's the greats at anything. Like,
yeah, I can't help it.
By the way, you entrepreneurs, like, there's healthy obsessions in life.
Sure.
Right. And like, so no matter what I'm ever doing, when I'm watching someone do something, I'm watching them speak. I'm looking for a business clue. I'm watching a television clue. Like, that strategy would work in this business I've got. It's never far from me. I'm always amazed by people who say, I want to be the best, or I want to be great, or I want to be a millionaire.
Yes.
Yet they're willing to escape their craft for long periods of time.
No, I can't do
it. Me either. And then I'm on vacation. I'm still sort of in my mode, looking at people, picking up stuff. That would be inspiring. That might be a business I could solve that problem with this product.
Right.
It's always there.
Yes, always. It's as when you, because it's who you are.
Yes.
And you can't, when what you do is who you are, you can't turn it off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I can't, like, my family knows when they're around me, they're like, here he goes.
Yeah.
Dad, don't start. Like, if I pull out my phone and start texting while they're talking, they're like, that's not going to be a bit. Like, they know when it hits me in the moment, like, because I see life through a different, comedians, we see life through a lens that civilians do not.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's just how I've been wired like that now.
Yeah.
Like, unfortunately, the more tragic it is, the quicker comedy comes to us. Like, we've had friends who have died in the comedy community that passed away. If you were on some of these text threads with us comedians, it's dark.
Right away.
Like, everybody's waiting for how long before we can, like, how long, can you see the funeral home behind you in the rearview mirror?
Yep.
Let's go. Like, we start. Like, and then knowing that the comedian who passed away, if they were here, would be on that thread.
They'd be laughing their ass off.
Exactly.
Yeah,
just who we are.
I remember when Norm died.
Yes.
And like, immediately, good friends of mine, I was on some threads with them. I'm like, wow, this quickly.
That's right.
Jeez, my God.
No,
we're going to talk about his gambling right now.
Bob Saget, who I had a chance to work with, same thing.
Yeah, like right away.
But it's just because it's in us. It's who we are. And if you are a salesman, if you, whatever you do, if you work, if you're a trainer, if you are a nutritionist, you see life through a different lens.
I love that.
You just, like, you somebody will bring you a what could look like a beautiful meal to me, and a nutritionist will look at that and go, all the sodium, look at all, like, something I will never see.
Yep, exactly right. Yep, those are people that are great.
That's
I'm just
right.
telling you, people, this whole thing in personal development right now, it's like you need to be present where you are.
Yes.
I completely believe that.
Agreed.
That doesn't mean, like, you probably have this too, even with my kids. Like, I do sometimes, I need to consciously put this phone down
and just
be in their presence.
Sure.
But at the same time, I never escape who I am, even in those moments. I might not type at that minute. I'm going, now this would be something inspiring.
And I got to hold on to it.
Like, I'm sorry. It's not coming off. And I think people take this stuff too literally, where they like escape their business or their craft. Like, this is part of, like, when I'm dead, I would like to be remembered for some of these things someday. Right.
Nice.
Do you ever think about, like, I suffer still, if I'm being honest, from some imposter syndrome.
Okay.
No matter how far down the road I've gone to whatever success there is or isn't that I've had, I still feel like this could go away tomorrow. And I work to keep it away. Now, I don't know if that's an unhealthy thing or a healthy thing, but this idea, I don't have like this notion like I've made it or is it or I'm here. I'm just wondering how you are on that. Like, do you have a little bit of that?
Not
I'm running towards something, but I'm also running away from being broke again. I'm running away from being irrelevant again.
Sure. I think I probably because I'm still not where I want to be, I don't think as much about it going away yet. You know what I mean? It's like, I think when you maybe hit, like, I don't know, a certain pinnacle, you might feel, I don't feel that as much as I feel like I have more that I want to do, and I'm continuously looking for ways to accomplish things that I want to accomplish. You know what I mean?
Is this all it was cracked up to be? Really? Answer that real. Like, when you got here 25 years ago, you had this vision of, hey, I'm going to be writing on all these TV shows. I'm going to have the number one show on Nickelodeon. I'm going to have a special that everyone on the planet's talking about. There wasn't any social media, but man, I'm going to walk through airports. People are going to know me. I'm going to buy a Porsche like you did last week when we recorded this thing, right? Like, all the stuff that I know, it's sort of sick how much I know about you. It's creepy. But is it what it's cracked up to be or not yet?
Not yet. This is what it is, and this is what I believe. And I'm, like I said, I'm not done. I know I have so much more to do. But what I can say is that, and I heard Oprah talk about this, and you hear people say it, and you don't believe it until you get there. But it truly is about the journey. It really is about the journey. I don't want to be broke again.
Right.
But I do want, like, you know, I'm starting theaters in the next month, right? I'm going from comedy clubs to theaters, which is, you know, small theaters, just because I guess I do have a fear, because every time my agents call me with another gig, I always think nobody's coming.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
Every time. They're like, I'm doing Pittsburgh, the Carnegie Music Hall in Pittsburgh. Nobody's coming. Like, that's all I'm like, what? Yeah. Like, they call me, and like, that's all I can, like, that thought.
Yeah.
Keeps me up in the middle of the night sometimes.
I love that, though.
But that is also the thing that makes me get up and create.
I think that's one of the elements of that thing.
Yes.
I think it's one of the little subparticles of that thing.
Yes.
Is you're like,
agreed.
Hey. Yeah, I do. I just feel like it's something that I want to always expose, like, little element. And for, look, everyone's recipe and formula of success or bliss or happiness is somewhat different.
Sure.
But there are, I think if you cut open, you, myself, anybody else that might be achieving beyond what a lot of people thought they would.
Yes.
There are elements of, if you cut us open, that are very, this sounds hokey, but there's this, our heart's similar. This heart, I mean, it's corny, this heart of a champion, this will,
Heart of a champion.
I might even be writing about this next. I used to have this talk I gave called My Will to Win is Not for Sale. Meaning, I think a lot of people in life, you could have done this. You have this precious, beautiful family, this amazing wife who's stayed by you through difficult times. And you have these beautiful daughters, and I've got a beautiful family as well. There could have been, people would not have criticized you had at some point 15 years ago, you just gone, look, man, I made a run at it, and it just didn't break through.
Right.
I'm going to go back to being nursing, or I'm going to go sell Mercedes.
Right.
And no one probably would have blamed you for that. But there was this thing in you. This is what I'm watching this man perform. I was like, this dude's will is different. He wouldn't sell his family's dreams. He wouldn't sell his dreams. Mm-hmm. Most men, most women, they can be bought with enough failure. Their will can be bought. There's a price tag. They're unwilling to pay. In other words, the price tag just gets too high.
Yes.
Right? And that's a poverty mentality, by the way. When I was broke, when I went shopping, I didn't get the thing I wanted. I get the thing I could afford. So I would flip price tags. What's it cost? What's it cost? What's it cost?
Right.
I think in life, if you're obsessed with what something's costing you, you're going to lose. But if you become obsessed with whether it's worth it, then that's different.
That's true.
And for me, I think most people, by the way, winning can buy someone's will to win. You've seen this in sports. Guy wins, fights like crazy to be the heavyweight champion of the world. Gets there. Mm-hmm. The will has been bought with that belt with a couple bucks.
Yes.
And that's the people that you described earlier, in my opinion, that go away, that that's become right. broke, that exactly. aren't famous
because
anymore.
Because you start to believe the things that people are telling you.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like even like you've said some fantastic things about me, mm-hmm. which I truly not only agree with, that I also, I'm like, listen, a part of being successful is also believing
yes.
that you deserve to be there.
Yes.
You know, and I agree with, but it does not fuel me or fool me to believe that there's not more and or that this can go away very quickly. Because eventually it all comes down. Exactly. Yep. The curtain comes down on every show.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Jackson was one of the biggest shows ever.
That's right.
And the curtain comes down. Frank Sinatra, some of the best. Joe Montana, like some of the Mike Tyson, like they're the greatest ever at whatever it is you do. Michael Jordan. The curtain always comes down, and what you have to look at is the things that I did. Did I give it my all, and was I the best that I could possibly be? Listen, I could stop today, and I can tell my children that I was successful. When I moved to LA, I had 2 trash bags of clothes and 3 addresses to 3 comedy clubs. That's it. Mm. I didn't have any friends. I didn't have anybody who to tell me, hey, man, you know, you should go. Nothing. And I walked from the rehab, which people did not know, to the comedy store, which is like 5 miles, to go do open mic. Mm. And sometimes I went there and it was the wrong day.
Knew you weren't performing.
And I had to walk back. But I did it every single time that I knew that that microphone was there.
Oh, wow.
And nobody knew. And there was times when I got on, when I showcased for Mitzi at the Comedy Store one time and I got in because I was ready.
Wow.
I showcased for Jamie at the Laugh Factory one time and I got in because I made sure that I had been doing stand-up in other places, little bars everywhere where I could get up. So when I got a chance to go where I really wanted to go, I was prepared.
Whoa.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So I don't get caught up in a lot of, you know, the hype of a lot of it because there's still so much more I want to do.
Yeah, but you were willing to do things most people weren't willing to do. By the way, this is confirmed stuff. There's a part of his special, everybody, where he becomes his grandfather. And you're talking about, he gets, you know, I was 6 years old. I'm 8, you know, I'm 4. I started work when I was 4 years old. It's hilarious. Yeah. But then there's this part, I was going to ask you this, where you talked about, he's not lazy.
Yeah.
And he walked. So there, you were actually referencing something that was true in that special about your walking.
That
inspires me so much.
Yeah, that was a true story. I mean, like, I remember walking. There's a distance between the Comedy Store and the Laugh Factory on Sunset, which I don't know, maybe it's a mile and a half, maybe 2 miles, I'm not sure. But I've walked that hundreds of times since I've been here.
Yeah.
Like, back and forth. Maybe I can get on stage here. No, I can't get on stage here. So, and I remember walking at night, back and forth between these clubs. And I remember thinking about my grandfather. And I knew that he knew that I was not lazy like I was when he used to call me when I was a kid and 9 and didn't want to work and lay asphalt all day. Mm. But I just had to find that thing inside of me that was worth it for me to walk.
Okay, I want to find out, because you're going to make me cry. So I want to find out what stuff is kind of true and what stuff is stretched a little bit.
Okay, sure.
So you, first off, I'm just picturing this man walking with his family, little girls at home or whatever, and just rooting for him to make it. Like, I just picture this dude, right?
They not at all. Yeah. My children don't even know why.
Yeah, but I'm rooting for you back then is what I'm saying, right? But maybe
that's such a great visual.
Maybe it's good for them to hear this, though. Like,
yeah,
I'm sure
they
know a lot of it. But, I mean, that's just remarkable that you would do that for you and your family. But this idea that, were you really, so I'm just picturing this guy. Like, those of you that are sitting there going, it's not going to happen for me. I picture a guy who's using drugs,
yeah,
He's been arrested multiple times. Mm-hmm. This is all true, right?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Finds himself many years later. Now he's sober, but he's still walking to even get gigs, right?
Yes.
People don't know. Was any of the part about you being incarcerated for 9 days or whatever, is that actually true?
100% true story. Bakersfield. I got arrested for a fix-it ticket. I was driving a car that did not have seatbelts on it. They wanted me to put seatbelts in the car. I found out it cost $600 to put seatbelts in a car I paid $600 for. I'm not going to do that. So I was like, I'm going to drive this car till it falls over. And it did. And I left it on the side of the road. And I just walked home. And I never thought about that car ever again. And I was somewhere drinking with my friends at Edwards Air Force Base like 2 years later. And they ran my name and a warrant came up. And it was a fix-it ticket that had turned into a warrant. So they took me to Bakersfield. And kept me in jail for 7 days. And I realized that ain't about that life.
One of the funniest things I've ever heard. I'm sure it's stretched, but like, he didn't want to get out of jail.
No, all of that is true. The salt.
Come on.
The story. Ted, please tell them this.
This is unreal.
So this is how disconnected I was from this world.
Okay, they need to know this to compare to where you are now. So you get locked up for a car you just left somewhere two years earlier.
Because it didn't have seatbelts and I just left it.
Okay.
And then I went to jail. Like two years later, I got picked up partying with my friends. They ran our name. My name came up. They took me up. And one county can only hold you for so long for another county. Mm-hmm. They're not coming. LA is not coming to get me. They're not, you know what I mean? Getting real criminals.
Right,
this
right.
guy had he didn't have seatbelts in a Pinto. Nobody's coming to get you.
Oh,
and but they could only hold me for 7 days. So I knew I was going to have to do 7 days. And I sat there for 7 days. And for 7 days, the hardest part of being in there was eating that food without any salt. That is what I was like, I can't live in a world with no seasoning. Like literally, that is who I was. And my mother was like, what is wrong with you? Like, she's like, you're not worried about any of the other things that could happen. They're raping people in there. People are getting shanked. And your complaint is that there is no salt. That's who I was. It's the truest story in the world.
It's unreal. And just flash that forward to now. It's like, probably even for you, it's funny, but to hear from an outside perspective, like, my God, it's a remarkable life. It's a and it's a testimony to like, just wanting something so bad, isn't it? And working so hard at it.
Yes.
It's that thing.
And and what's crazy is like, and I don't know, and maybe you can tell me how, sometimes I'm afraid to say out loud what I really want because I'm afraid that I'm going to fail and not get it.
Yes.
So if I don't say it out loud, it's not out there.
Yep.
And therefore I didn't fall short.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm going to say this for the first time here. I want to play in arenas.
Okay.
I've never said it out loud.
Okay. We got you. I can see it on your face. Look at you.
I've never said that.
Mm.
I believe that I have it. The work ethic that I put into my craft deserves it, and I'm good enough. And so like now as I'm going out to perform in these, you know, these 1,000, 1,200, maybe the biggest is 1,800 seat venues. And I'm nervous that I'm going to be performing for 300 people in a venue that holds 18. Mm-hmm. Like that is my biggest fear, right? Mm-hmm. That even if that is the case, that still will not stop me.
I love it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I remember performing in New York at Dangerfields. I needed to do a half hour to get the $150 I needed for my rent that night. And it was a room that held 350 people, and it was two people in the audience. And I did that time. The week after this last Netflix special, it ain't for the week. I put it in the can. I'm in a theater in Cleveland. The next week, I'm in Columbia, South Carolina. Room holds 400 people. There were 9 people in the audience.
Oh.
I did an hour and 45 minutes that night. Oh. I had one of the best sets I've ever had in my life. Mm. Because I knew now that I was in my element.
Yeah.
So I know what I want to do, and I've never said that out loud.
This is why I do what I'm doing. I'm going to be there when you do it. I'm going to be there when you do it. And we're gonna help you do it. I see it on your face. Like, it's really deep in you that you want to do that.
I didn't get into this business to be one of the people that, oh yeah, and he's funny too.
Right.
I got into this business to be one of the best storytellers and to be one of the funniest people and to cut across all nationalities, all ages of everything, because I believe that the stuff I do is family and life. And to me, that's, that's universal.
Let me say something to you. One, I am blessed that I do get to sometimes speak in big arenas.
Right.
So I kind of, when I watch people, it's, man, I just wish I was recording the conversation the night that I watched you, because it doesn't even matter. You wouldn't believe me anyway. But I literally said, this dude should be in the arenas like Sebastian is.
Right.
For a couple reasons.
Yeah.
One, you already have the type of, you know, that's a different projection, a different energy to fill a big room than it is a small room.
Sure.
You already kind of, you fit the room.
Sure.
But you could easily overwhelm a room. Like, you have the presence and the charisma and the energy to do 50,000 people if you wanted to.
Yeah.
That's number one. The other thing you do that's really uniquely nuanced, you do crossover, you do meet everybody, yet you do it in a way, and this is really unique, where although you're completely aware of who you are still. So although you do reach all demos, some people do that by sort of a lack of authenticity about who they really are.
Mm-hmm.
It's still very clear who you are. It's still very clear where you come from.
Sure.
Still really clear how you were raised.
Yeah.
Yet you are able to nuance that in such a way that you do reach all different types of people.
Yeah.
Someone could be black, white, Hispanic, Asian, religious, non-religious, 65-year-old laughing their ass off at your content, or 19-years-old laughing about stuff too.
Yes.
It's so that's absolutely a fact for you. And we're going to help you do that. I can see how a big deal. Is that more important to you than even like being on TV, being in a movie, being anything like that?
The movies have never been something that I was like, oh, I want to be in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've always wanted to be a dad on TV. Because my grandfather, my dad, those were the funniest people in the world to me, you know? And the examples that we saw from the TV fathers I grew up with, Bill Cosby was one. Unfortunately, you know, it comes with an asterisk next to it now, but I still connected to that character.
Yep.
And, you know, that's what I've always wanted to do. The two things I've always wanted to do was to, when my name goes up on a marquee, I want people to see it and want to come and know that this dude is going to take us.
He's going to deliver.
Mm-hmm.
It's an experience.
Yes, it's going to be fun.
One other thing, and I'm going to stop complimenting you. There's no, usually when you listen to an album of somebody, I'm talking about a music album, you're like, these two songs play well. These are the six fillers.
Exactly.
A lot of comedy specials. You're like, hey, you got to hear him say these two bits, right?
These are the jokes, right?
That is not your stuff. Every freaking minute is full. There are no ones.
It's
I'm telling you, it's an experience.
You.
And that's why I wanted to see what's he like in person too, which is exactly the same way. I'm a couple more things I want to ask you, because you're too valuable of a brain not to pick it some more. What do you tell your daughters about either life or success? They're watching you. There's some notoriety aspect of yours, but like, I could tell there's a closeness there that's pretty remarkable with your family.
Yeah.
Obviously your wife is an amazing woman.
She is.
And I love what she says even in the documentary about you, maybe the two of you were like soulmates born to be with each other. You know, she says that, you know, I'm sure on the good days, on the bad days, maybe
she
questions that. But what do you do? Do you have those conversations with your daughters about success or life?
Sure.
And what do you tell them?
Sure. Listen, success... And this was something I was going to start earlier when I was telling you about where I came from in the trash bag of clothes. Success is relative to everybody's life.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, success does not mean that I have to be in arenas.
Mm-hmm.
I started with two trash bags and three comedy clubs. If I never do any more than I did right now, I'm successful. I started with nothing, and I have two very good stand-up specials, and I can make a great living performing at comedy clubs the rest of my life if mm-hmm. that's what I wanted to do. Yeah. I'm successful. I think that success is relative to who you are. I tell my daughters that all the time. You have to decide what you deem success to be. Because success for one person could mean
yep.
I'm not successful unless I win six NBA titles.
Yeah.
Some people's success could be I just made a living playing basketball.
Yep.
And I put my family through college, and I did all the things. My grandfather, like I said, owned an asphalt company mm-hmm. with an eighth grade education and put all of us through college, some medical school. We have physicians and all in my family. Incredible. And this is from a man who had an eighth grade education. He was successful.
Big time.
He was so, my grandfather was so successful. That Cadillac that he drove us to church in every week, that he was, there was nobody more successful than my grandfather. My dad, an engineer and a race car driver. He's 72 years old right now, my father. He pulls his race car with his pickup trailer all around the country and drives. All of his pit crew and his friends have passed away, but my dad still goes out there and races by himself. Mm-hmm. He's successful.
He is successful. I have a sister who's a school teacher. She's blind, mm-hmm. pretty much.
Really?
She's legally blind. She's
right.
diabetic. Super successful because she's living her dream. See, I think success is that when you're the life you're living matches your expectations and vision for
That's
it.
That's right.
And for you and I, we're hard to be married to sometimes too, because like it's going to keep growing.
Yes.
It's going to keep expanding. And
yes.
sometimes you'll have people around you like, hey, wait a minute. I thought this was it. And then we were going to relax. You're like, that's
right.
not, it's the journey.
It's the
not
journey.
Just one place. I want my own expansion as a person.
Yeah.
My reach, you know, what makes me happy. By the way, Eddie, your dad,
mm-hmm.
my dad's name was Eddie also.
Oh.
But he reminds me of the way he carries himself in your documentary of my dad. I can't quite put my finger on it, but there's a, my dad had a, even though my dad was a drinker, you know, mm-hmm. when he was a.
So was my dad.
It's kind of just
he's sober now too.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Eddie. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a, my dad had a dignity or an elegance to him that just,
I know what you're
I'd
talking
like
about.
To kind of have.
It's a pride.
Yeah, pride. Mm-hmm. And I saw that in your dad, just in the little interactions you had with him.
That's my dad.
Yeah. I want to ask you a couple more things, just because
sure.
I'm so fascinated by
sure.
you and your daughters. Is it accurate? Because you seem to have this great marriage. Was there really a really, in Fat Ballerina, you talk a little bit about a bumpy time
yeah,
in your marriage.
Of course.
What really changed it? Like, how have you built a good marriage? Like, the people listen to this, are like, hey, I'm blowing up in my career. And
right.
the truth is, every time, most people ask me, how do I get the support at home? In other words, oftentimes their career success seems to be creating friction in their relationship.
No.
Not for
because,
you.
No. Okay. Well, my wife is a performer. My wife was the third African-American woman to dance online with the New York Radio City Rockettes. She was a Rockette when I met her. She was, when my wife also toured and danced with Jimmy Buffett in his band, the Coral Reefer Band. She was in his band for 5 years. My wife has done many Broadway tours. She's done hundreds of commercials. She hosted a TV show on ABC called Made in Hollywood.
Wow.
She's knows this business. She was successful when I met her. She was way above and beyond what I was doing. My wife was flying around on private jets when I met her
okay.
with Jimmy Buffett. You know, I was like, I remember the
you
first.
You took her all the way to One Juice.
Right, exactly. When I met my wife, I was like, you should come see me perform. I'm going to be at the Comedy Store in the Belly Room. It's about, you know, hold about 80 seats. And my wife for a long time never told me what she did. And then one day she was like, you know, I'm going to be performing in Vegas. And I went, she's stripping, right? And I went to Vegas, and she had these tickets they left for me. And I'm like, where are you performing? She said, MGM Grand. And I said, what?
Wow.
I walk in, heard Jimmy Buffett on stage. That, you know, they got the jumbotrons.
Yeah.
Camera hits my wife, and she winks because she knows I'm out there somewhere. And I said, I got to have it. Oh, I got to have it. So, like, when you have a woman who knows, I've never once ever heard anything from my wife except for keep going, go do it.
Wow.
Do it. Mm-hmm. You got it.
I love it.
Now, do we argue? Yes, we argue. We almost got a divorce, you know, many years back because, you know, of life. I messed up as men do. I've done all the wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
I called her father and told her father that I messed up. I called her parents and told them. That's the thing that comes with being sober and, you know, I'm not afraid to be wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not afraid to be wrong. I've like, I did these things, but let me explain to you why. And we had our whole, like, we went through a lot of stuff, but I think, and now me and my wife argue. Like, we argue. We'll argue in front of you. You know what I mean? I think I talk about that in the special. Like, that's who we are. Like, we do, we are the most real people. And yes, sometimes I want to leave and sometimes she wants me to leave. But I don't know where it is, how it is. We, me and my wife can have a drop down, drag out fire of an argument. And then soon as it's over, it's like, so what we, what you want to eat?
That's awesome, though.
I don't know how we got there. I think it's because, I don't know. I don't know. But
I think people don't take, I don't think people in anything in life have an appreciation for like experience and longevity together, even in anything. Like one of the reasons you're successful in your comedy career is like you just got a ton of experience.
Yes.
A ton of experience. Like
28 untapped years.
Yeah, like they're like that's a really, really big deal. Same in a relationship. Like if you just got experience together over time,
yeah,
there's a depth
to that.
How long
have you been married?
25 years.
Yeah, I've been married 19.
Yeah, I met my wife when I was 5 and we dated in high school. That's no joke.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I know.
Wait,
I know.
Wait, what? When you were 5?
Yeah, yeah, literally. We didn't, you know, we went to the same school, but she grew up down the street from me. We went to
really?
High school together. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. I know. And by the way,
where are you from?
Well, we grew up in Southern California. I was born in Boston, but I grew up in Southern California.
I'm going to Boston. I'm doing a Wilbur Theater in Boston.
Well, you're doing some other things in Massachusetts that are really cool coming up, like today, as a matter of fact, too. Your life's unbelievable. All right, last thing I want to ask you. By the way, I want to, I want to have you back when you do your next special.
Oh, my
and
God,
I want
yes.
to have you back when you when we're doing arenas. I want to make sure that I have you back.
Now I feel pressure.
No.
I said it out loud.
Like, there's been very few people. Listen, man, I've done hundreds of shows. I've got, you know, I've got a family and businesses and speaking and all this stuff that I do. And I got my own show out right now, Nosy, Change with Ed Mylett on Nosy. But I got to tell you, I'm like super interested in you. Obviously, I feel like I know maybe a creepy amount of information about you at this stage for only knowing who you were for a little window of time. But like, I know a lot. By the way, we got through like 5% of my questions here.
What?
Yeah, because I know so much about you. But let me ask you this last.
Uh-huh.
Someone ran into you at a Starbucks right now,
yeah.
right? They've listened to the show. They're like, man, I was really inspired by your story, by yeah. the type of life you're living, what your
sure.
breakthroughs, the struggles you've had, mm-hmm. your upbringing, all of it, the way you communicate.
Yeah.
Obviously, your heart, too. You just tell you're a good man. It's a guy who was in jail for a week. And now he's, you know, got the best special on the planet Earth. It's unbelievable. And they said, hey, I want to be successful. And I'm just like, I'm just treading water right now. And could you,
I get
what would you say to me? That might nudge me forward. It could be any piece of information, anything I should remember, anything I should think or do. I mean, just anything. If I had 2 minutes with you, what would you say to them?
I would say that what you're feeling is exactly what you're supposed to be feeling. Because anything worth anything is not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be hard. It's supposed to make you feel like you feel, which is maybe I shouldn't do this. Maybe this is a mistake. Maybe I should quit. Nobody around me believes in you. And the hardest part is sometimes the people that are closest to you will be the ones that will give up on you first.
Yeah.
Even your agents, even your like, that's real. You have to want what you want hard enough that cuts through all of that. And you have to find that thing and whether or not you have that thing that makes this thing that you want not having it unacceptable. It has to be, you have to be able to go, can I live without it? Can I go to bed at night, wake up one day knowing that I said I wanted to do something and I gave up and am I okay
yeah.
with going, I'd let that one go.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
Me either.
Not for something. There's some things where I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gonna jump out a plane. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm past that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. But like, there's some things that some things are not negotiable, and there's some dreams that are not for sale.
Oh boy, that's really, really good. Really, really good. Yeah, I don't even want to add to that except for that negotiable part. Negotiate the price in advance. And
yeah, know your worth.
Pay it. Yeah, know your worth. One of my favorite conversations of all time.
Dude, I got to be honest with you. And I've been on a little tour yeah. doing a lot of media stuff, you know, because for the special. Mm-hmm. You know, when you sit and talk to somebody mm-hmm. who really has done their homework.
Yeah.
You know, and I did the same. I watched a lot of your work. And I was like, this dude is like, is firing on a different frequency.
Thank you, brother.
And everybody does not do that.
Yeah. I know when I meet someone, I'll know the rest of my life, and I'm going to know you the rest of my life.
I feel like that. I agree.
Do. I just feel like that. I hope I outlive you. But having said that.
Well, you look like you're going to. This dude is in shape. I feel like I need to go do some crunches.
You're in great shape, too. I said you look like Maxwell. Those are the best compliments I could ever give you in your life. Trust me, everybody. So where do you want to go? Where do you want him to go? We want to go get you on the road on this tour so we start filling up arenas.
Oh, man. DavidAArnold.com right now. The tour is called Pace Yourself. You can see, obviously, you can go. You have to put in the A. A lot of people put in David Arnold. If you put in David Arnold, you're going to get the white guy that does the soundtracks for James Bond. That ain't me. You got to put in David A. Arnold. You can get me on social medias all across the platform. And if you go to my website, it'll take you right to the cities where we're going. And this is just the first half. Like the next, we haven't even announced the back, you know,
I'm going to drop an email for you. I told you that.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
So guys, listen to me. His social media is so damn entertaining. You're going to be wanting to watch it just because your life will be enriched by it. And by the way, go get It Ain't for the Week on Netflix. And that girl, Lele on Nickelodeon, is the number one show on there right now. This guy's got a lot going on right now. So I'm really grateful you made the time and snuck in between flights to be here.
So glad to see you, man. Yeah. I'm looking forward to lunch and everything.
Yeah, me too. All right, everybody. God bless you. Share this show today. You know this one's going to be fire. It's going to be viral. Share it with as many people as you can. Go get The Power of One More, my book. It's still out there. Number one book in the world. God bless you. Max out.
This is the Ed Milet Show.